Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with CMO Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to be talking with Sean Bacon. Sean is a Canadian Armed Forces veteran who served 12 years as a paratrooper and instructor at the Canadian Forces Military Police Academy. And during that time, he developed a system of training to psychologically and physically prepare both soldiers and police to thrive in some of the worst situations and environments. He leads a company now that leverages his experience to work with corporate leaders and organizations develop and sustain mental toughness, leadership, and team development in a competitive environment. He's worked with many corporate clients, as well as the Tokyo 2020 Olympic gold medal women's eight rowing team. He has some great thoughts to share around mental preparedness and how to be a better leader. Looking forward to today's conversation with Sean. Tell us a little bit about your career journey. You've got an interesting background and story. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. I did 12 years in the Canadian Armed Forces. I was both a paratrooper and a military policeman. Upon my retirement, I was the chief use of force and firearms and tactics instructor at the Military Police Academy. And, so that all just kind of led into this. I got out, went back to school. The journey just led me here. And now I work very hard to work with leaders and entrepreneurs and business people to help them out, get them where they're going.
Good. Well, you know, I like to ask this question, kind of one of the first questions I ask most guests. If you were able to spin back time and talk to that impressionable 22-year-old Sean, what advice would you give him?
Get out of your own way. I really would say that to myself back then. I was very gung-ho. I was very intense. Very driven, impatient. I was very impatient to get to do all the high speed, low drag things. And, hey, slow down, enjoy the journey. And just because it's something you don't like doesn't mean it's not valuable. I was taken off a course, it was a rappel master course. I was really excited about going on it. And they took me off of it and sent me to a combat intelligence operator's course. And I went, what? I didn't want to go. I did really well on the course. Got recommended to come back for additional training. But yet here I am years later. That course gave me such great tools that I still use to this day. So that's kind of where I'd go, if I had to go backwards.
So what I have to ask this question because I'll probably forget to ask it later on, but what's your scariest moment as a paratrooper?
Oh, they're all scary. They're all scary. If anyone says they're not scared jumping out of a perfectly serviceable aircraft is a liar. Scariest, I had a couple blown panels and I was falling a little faster, but realistically, they're all scary. I think the scariest jump I ever did was I got attached to a group called Pathfinder Platoon, and that they're advanced airborne reconnaissance, and their packs are ridiculously heavy, 70, 80 pounds. And I was really nervous because I was an MP. I wasn't a Pathfinder. I'm not qualified to be a Pathfinder. And I was attached to the unit and I doing a jump with them. These are very experienced, this is like the pointy tip of the spear. These are the people that get stuff done. They drop behind enemy lines, build a drop zone, and then disappear like ghosts. Well, the pilot messed up the bit of the drop zone. And I was on the starboard side. I was number two in the door. A guy named Joe was ahead of me, and the plane banked. And he fell out. And of course, moment that happened, I square off to the door right away. I'm looking at the jump master going, that just happened. He goes, green light, go, everyone go, 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 go. So we ended up having a very small drop zone. Instead of having the full drop zone, we had like a corner of it. So yeah, it was an interesting jump.
So you've worked with also some teams. Talk a little bit about that as far as the, I know you've done some coaching on the Olympic team there in Canada. Talk a little bit of just some things that you've learned in coaching others at a high level.
Well, like 1% of my business is athletics, and I do it as a passion project because with athletics, it's, you can apply the psychological and mental tools and watch it happen physically. You can actually watch it happen in real time. So that's really exciting. And then I've been given the privilege of working with a variety of Olympic level teams. And one in particular that really stands out is the women's eight. And they won the gold medal in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, which was actually 2021 because of the pandemic. Sure.
Yep.
But I mean, and it's funny, they call it the women's eight and there's nine women in the boat. Eight rowers and the coxswain. And the rowers are, they're this tall and they're powerful, very powerful women. And the coxswain's this tall and she's equally as powerful. And the really wonderful thing that happens at that level is they're already tremendous athletes. They're already specialists. They're the top 1% in the world of what they do. So really it's that mind game, that getting in their mindset prepared so that their bodies can do what they do best. And usually what stops any Olympic athlete, whether it's soccer or track or Paralympics, or it doesn't matter, it's the brain game. So, and that goes with all of us. I mean, we're all in our own Olympics, so to say. So we're all dealing with that same battle. With them, you get to watch it happen. You get to see them crack that code. You just get to see him take off. And to watch that race, like go on YouTube and check it out. They won by a third of a boat length. And the last time that boat won a gold medal, their coach was in it. Okay. Their coach was in the boat. And they just devastated everybody. And in the pure passion of when they won was, I was in tears. I was absolutely in tears. So it's a real privilege to be able to work with groups like that.
So taking that experience, and again, you know, on the corporate side, it's probably you're not seeing the results of the mindset right play out in front of you, but kind of, and how do you coach a leader around mindset? You know, they're in a lot of our leaders, people that listen to this are first time leaders or first time CEOs. What are some things that you can give as far as some tips that they can be doing as far as to help in their mindset?
Well, right out of the gates, whether you're an emerging leader or senior leader, developing leader, no matter where you are in that scale, you have to realize you're never going to stop learning, period. So you have to be open to, you're never going to arrive as a leader. You got to be okay with that. You're never going to arrive. You're always going to be developing your skill set, and it's okay not to have all the answers. And that's where the mindset begins. You got to remove your ego. You got to look at people. Leadership is about people. Management is a science, leadership is an art, and leadership is about people. So right out of the gates, build your mindset of, what do my people need? Build that mindset there. Then how do I push my people? How do I care for my people? And that is, see, and those are in a dichotomy. They're in opposites that need to be balanced. And you can push people. You can demand quite a bit from them. However, you also have to care about them. You got to care about their welfare. You got to promote their welfare. You got to use their specialties. So as a young leader, any leader, start there. If you're going to build mindset, you got to actually know what kind of mindset you want first. Start with your people and then have a North Star. Have a succinct mission, not a mission statement. I don't actually believe in mission statements. They're flowery. They're fluffy. They don't actually say a lot. They're more of an ad piece, but a mission is a successful end state. And if you've got a really clear, successful end state that people can galvanize and recognize and go after, now you can build your mindset based on that end state. And that's how I would do it.
I was reading and one of your pieces, it talked about developing an action-based operational culture.
Yeah.
And you said that type of culture tends to attract people of character and people that have high values. Talk a little bit about that. Of how do you develop that action-based operational culture?
Well, one of the big things or failings that most leaders do is they procrastinate or they hesitate. They're recovering perfectionists. Mm. You know, they're looking for that perfect scenario that they can say yes to, that they're not going to look bad. I would rather a person take an educated risk. I'd rather they fail and learn from the failure and then readjust and then reengage. Now, when it comes to a character, the thing is, if you're going to create an action-based culture, and I'll get to the crux of it here in a moment.
Sure.
People of great character. There's this huge trend now that it's moving away from talent-based recruiting to character-based recruiting. Because people with great character, they show up early, they leave late. They believe in what they're doing. They have passion about what they're doing. They bring up ideas freely. They support each other. It's not an I, it's a we. So if you take that character, now here's the fun part, and you remove the procrastination in the ideal scenario, it's important to create action as soon as you can. Like, get all the information you can, but then sooner or later, you need to pull the trigger. Hmm. A great analogy is for those that play golf. I don't. Okay. I choose not to. But the longer you look at the ball, the less likely that ball's going where you think it's going. If you're decisive, you crack the ball, even if it's off a bit, you can adjust. But the longer you look at that damn ball, the less likely it's going where you want it to. That's because your brain is now overworking, thinking about all the angles. Sooner or later, you have to take that educated risk. Action-based culture demands courage and vulnerability, and get people moving. Get out of the analysis paralysis, make decisions and stand by them. And if they're wrong, learn, readjust, and get your people back into action. Okay, something messed up. Okay, it's not fatal at this point. No one's shooting at us. Let's carry on.
So what mistakes are you seeing new leaders make as you're coaching executives? What are some common things that you're seeing?
That analysis paralysis is probably number one.
Right.
No one wants to look bad. The second one is that people will quit before they fail. They don't want to look bad, so they'll just stop before they hit the failure. And it's funny, you don't choose to fail, but you do choose to quit. And okay, get out of your own way. Look, it's okay. Mistakes are going to happen. And you got to be self-forgiving a little bit here. It's really important to do that. But it's also important to hold yourself accountable. So that's the third one, the accountability piece. I would like to call it ownership. If something happened with my team, buck stops with the leader. Okay. There are no, as Jocko Willink once said, there's no bad teams. There's only bad leaders. And if something goes wrong, leader takes ownership. The team actually sees and feels that, and they'll work really hard to make it right. And that's number four. Stop worrying about the blame game and make it right. That's all that matters. Just make it right. Don't, it's not about who dropped the ball. It's about how you're picking it up and going again, because that's an action-based culture. It's getting things moving. And we get caught up in the blame game a little too much. So it's about the solution, not the problem.
That's good. So you have 12 commandments of mental toughness. And we've talked a little bit on some of these, but If you were to pick, and we were talking through the 12, we don't have enough time to go through all 12 probably, yeah, unless you're really fast at it. Ooh. But pick your top three or four that you think for a new leader that you think would be important for them. And again, that will give access to your website. And I don't know if this is on there or not, but maybe we'll definitely make it available. Yeah. Talk through a couple of those.
There's a lot, there's ones I really gravitate to for me. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, my 12th commandment is my most important one, which is find a way or make a way. Okay. There's always a way to get something done. Okay. Find a way. The solution exists. It's everything's figure outable. Okay. So find a way or make a way. And that resilience, that determination, that drive, it's infectious. Colin Powell once said, optimism is a force multiplier. Find a way or make a way is very optimistic. So I'm a big fan of that one. It's my last one, but it's the one that just carries me through a lot of things. And I've got a lot going on right now. So it's really, I'm using my own commandments. Trust me.
Sure.
The other one I would really go to is pain and discomfort are temporary. Okay. Like we tend to hesitate. Oh, that's going to hurt. Oh, that's going to suck. Or, I'm going to look bad. Temporary. It's always temporary. Okay. It's that discomfort. Your discomfort as a leader is important. That's your professional scar tissue. That's your resume. That's what makes you a good leader, is by going through things that are adverse and uncomfortable. So always remembering that that pain and that discomfort is temporary. It's not going to last forever. And once you realize that, it's amazing what you give yourself permission to do. Failing harder. I love failing harder. I'm a big fan of failure because there's the lesson in failure that you can't get anywhere else. And it's in terms of atypical education, it's the master of the school. Okay. Failure is the only thing that'll teach you in a way that nothing else will. It gives you humility. It gives you courage. It gives you confidence later on. And you can always leverage it into success if you're open to it. And then the last one I think I would really go to is standards, not expectations. Words matter. Okay. I'm interrogation qualified. Words matter. Way people describe things matter. If you want to know a person's mindset, listen to the way they describe something. If they're describing it in a lot of negativity, yet there's their mindset, or it can't be done, can'ts, won'ts, shoulds, woulds, coulds. Now you know their mindset. But expectation, the word expectation, it proliferates our language. And what happens is, so before I go there, let me just define it. Here's the Sean Bacon definition of an expectation. It's an assumption without the benefit of communication.
That's good.
Okay. I expect you to know better. I expect you to be on time. I expect you to do it differently. We've either heard these words or used these words, but a standard is your minimum level of acceptable success. It's the metric. It's the line in the sand. This is pass. This is fail. So if we can pull away expectations, we're always talking about managing expectations, mitigating expectations. How about just get rid of them and create standards? And one of the first things when I work with a leader is I get them to create standards on communication. Let's create three standards right now on communication, because the number one reason for conflict, whether it's one-on-one or on a global scale, doesn't matter. It's the absence of or disruption of information. Communication. And we don't think about how a person's hearing us or listening to us. So active listening is actually the highest level of communication. So how much thought do we put into, you know, how you're going to hear me? So that's where I start the standard. Start with communication, and now you've got a beautiful base to grow from. Now we can build standards on performance, standards on whatever you need. So those are the four I would go after.
You mentioned it around listening skills. And I think it's, as a leader, I think most people think it's the person that's up there talking the most. That's not really a leader. No. A leader is asking questions and listening. What are some things that somebody can do as far as maybe to improve their listening skills? And I think you mentioned actually in one of your 12 commandments, be present was maybe part of that, right?
Well, being present is important. I mean, we're distracted. Mm-hmm. Constantly. I mean, squirrel. Oh, shiny. We've got something going on all the time. To the point of, you know, we're multitasking. We don't even realize we're multitasking. But to truly be present in a moment and listen with more than just your ears. Bodies don't lie. Bodies are communicating all the time. So how often do we pay attention, present in watching and paying attention and showing some emotional intelligence? What is being portrayed here? And people don't ask questions. They make statements. And it's those questions that matter. Getting the, you know, the, and we're talking about open-ended questions, the who, what, why, when, where, how, you know, closed-ended questions are answerable with yes or no, open-ended, great conversation. How did you get there? What would you do differently? That's my favorite question in the world. What would you do differently? I don't berate or, you know, punish people if they get something wrong. It's okay. How did you get there? What would you do differently? And you watch them process, and it's just this beautiful thing that occurs. And when people feel heard and felt, they lean in. Now, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, give them a warm hug every 5 seconds, because you do need to hold them accountable. A great leader has to be that, again, that dichotomy. You know, one part ruthless, one part deeply caring, one part direct, one part humorous, one part, you know, you got to play with that. But there's a good book in terms of listening that I mandate anybody I do executive coaching with. It's one of their workbooks, and it's called Just Listen. And it's written by Dr. Mark Goldston. He's a forensic psychiatrist. It's written in a business language, not law enforcement. And it's just, it's got good real life examples, great tools, and it's required reading as far as I'm concerned.
Any other books that you would put on a leader's list of books to read?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Dare to Lead by Brené Brown is fantastic. But my go-to for leadership is actually Leadership Secrets of Colin Powell. Hmm. God rest his soul. I got a chance to see him at a PowerPoint once when I was still serving, and it stayed with me. And his book is literally on that PowerPoint. It's brilliant. Hmm. And mine's got tabs. I still use it as a reference. So yeah, that one is huge. And then of course, Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. And they actually wrote another one called The Dichotomy of Leadership, which really breaks down the importance of why a leader needs to be constantly shifting between their extremes, and the importance of when people understand why you are, they're more apt to follow you. I have a library of, I'm constantly reading. So I don't think I'll ever stop learning about leadership. So, yeah.
Well, I asked you about if you have a book that's going to come out, and you said there's one percolating. So we'll definitely be looking forward to that too. Outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
Ooh, I have a motorcycle. I go out for rides through the. I'm very fortunate. I live on an island, so I'll ride by the ocean or through, you know, old forests, and that's really good. I read a lot. My exercise is my church. I need to work out, and I find that that's where my brain gets to kind of take a mental pause. Same thing as the motorcycle. You can't think of something complex and ride your motorcycle.
Sure. Yeah.
You have to be really paying attention. So, and hiking, I love hiking, you know, and then I got this beautiful terrain around here that I get the privilege of being able to hike through. So those are my go-tos. Absolutely. And I invest in my time off. I invest as much as I invest in my reading and my professional development. I also invest in my downtime.
So what is your, I need to ask, what's your exercise routine? What is it that you,
It depends on the day. Right now I am actually doing classic good old school airborne calisthenics, push-ups, flutter kicks, unassisted sit-ups, burpees. Although this morning I was in the gym, you know, I do what's called, antagonistic training. So I'll get two muscles fighting against each other, chest, back, biceps, triceps, that kind of thing. And then I'll finish it off with some sort of cardio.
Okay. So give our listeners some parting advice. What would you say as your to those that are there, maybe in their maybe first week, who knows? They might be going, what did I get myself into? What would you tell them?
Two things. One, find a mentor. Find someone that will invest in you, that has made a lot of mistakes in leadership, that is willing to show you their wisdom. I've had the blessing of great mentors, continue to have great mentors, and I've become a mentor. It's my turn. I have to pay it back. And that's what you got to do. If you're going to get a mentor, you're going to pay it back. Two, get the hell out of your own way. Okay. You're not going to get it right 100% of the time. Own it. Enjoy the journey and just get out of your own way and find your North Star. Okay. If you're in your own way, you know, you're in your own way. Okay. You're looking in the mirror going, damn it, I could have done that differently. Or damn it, I'm the one holding me back. You are. End statement. So get out of your own way, find a mentor, and then grow more leaders.
Yeah. Great advice. So how would somebody learn more about you and your work?
They can find me on my website, which is www.dynamic-shift.com, or they can find me on my LinkedIn, and that is also under Dynamic Shift or Sean Bacon.
Great. Well, Sean, it's been so much fun getting to know you and hearing your thoughts around leadership, and definitely wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thank you. Likewise, brother.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.